Thank you, Jack, and thank you to the organizers, and especially I would like to express my admiration for choosing such a pleasant venue for this meeting. I'm going to talk today about work that I've done with a number of collaborators, three of whom are in the audience, and the fourth, my former student, Joe Putko, might better be giving this talk, but he's getting married in a week, and so I think his mind is on other things. So I'm going to talk about two historical supernova remnants. This is two of the top five, I suppose, supernova 1572 or Tycho and SN 1006. Both of these were spectacularly bright at outburst, but despite that, today the optical emission that we see from them is exceedingly unprepossessing. We see only faint Balmer lines that are characteristic of the non-radiative or bomber-dominated shocks that we've already heard so much about. So, let's go back. Start with Tycho. It appeared in November of 1572, and according to Tycho's description, it equaled Venus at maximum, as he described it in his book published in the... the subsequent year, and was visible to the naked eye, which of course was the only way of doing observations in those days, for about a year and a half. And Walter Botta, using observations, the records from Tycho and others, reconstructed the light curve here that is shows the exponential decay that is the classic pattern of what we now know as type 1a supernovae. Interestingly, Kepler's supernova that went off just 28 years later also shows the same pattern, but it's a couple of magnitudes fainter. And if there's any doubt of the fact that SN1572 was a type 1a, this was removed with a discovery by Armin Rest in 2008, the light echoes, and the soon thereafter obtaining a spectrum that showed that it was definitively a type 1a event. All right, so we have seven epochs of CCD imaging going back to relatively early in the CCD era, and I'm going to just flip through a few of these at any rate. And if you just watch the filaments here, you're going to see them moving out. I'll just do that once more. All right, now, a caveat here that you probably didn't notice unless you were watching exceedingly carefully is that not all of the filaments evolve in a coherent or continuous fashion. So here is the movie, as it were, extending from 86 to 2009. The red thing is here just to point to that star as a fiducial marker. And so here's a filament here that starts out quite bright, and as we go across here is fading, going, and gone. And meanwhile, down here, we have this relatively bright linear filament that goes along, and here it sort of breaks up, and the brightest part of it trails behind here, and something new picks up at almost the same location up ahead. So if you just pick out a couple of epochs and try to do the proper motion measurement, you can easily become confused. So we've been careful, having as many epochs as we do, to pick filaments that evolve in a coherent way. And here's just one example of some fader filaments along the northeastern rim where the whole complex evolved fairly coherently. Now, also in Tycho, in addition to the not very bright, but bright by comparison filaments, there's some much fainter stuff, which you can perhaps just barely see, and maybe not at all, indicated by these arrows down here, that occurs at the very rim of the remnant, as you can judge by comparing that to the radio and optical picture. So I'll just go back and forth once. So we no way are you going to be able to see the expansion of these if I put them on the screen, but these are measurable in at least three or four epochs of our images at a few azimuths along the way. So here I'm showing you all the filaments for which we have measured proper motions, and so the vectors here indicate where the filament that is there today, where it will be 300 years from now if it continues its motion at its present rate. And the rather subtle color coding here is I've used red for filaments that are at the rim of the radio X-ray shell, and magenta for those that lie somewhat interior to that. All of these are sheets that we're seeing edge on. The distinction is fairly minor between them, but I did make it. So for the purposes of comparison with the filaments or the proper motions at other bands, which is shown here. So this is the just plotting as a function of azimuth as we start at north and go around to the east. And the red are the our measurements of proper motions, the solid ones, the ones that I indicated that are at the rim, and the open circles are ones that are more interior. The green are the radio measurements, and the blue in X-ray, both of these from a very recent paper by Brian Williams that he talked about yesterday. And what you can see here is that at any given azimuth, the measurements in different bands mostly agree with one another within the errors. There are a couple of exceptions, but the agreement is really pretty good. And here is the same plot, but I've recast this in terms of the expansion index, just the present rate of motion divided by the average over the 440-year history of the remnant. And so set-off expansion would correspond to an index of 0.4 there, and you can see that the present expansion rate is mostly well in excess of set-off, except at a couple of locations, here and here, and those correspond to this bright eastern filament, that's this part, and this guy up here in the northwest. And so those are the places where the optical filaments are brightest, and presumably this is because the surrounding medium that the shock is encountering is the densest, so it's hardly a surprise that it would be slowing down more rapidly there. All right, let's move now to SN1006. So here's something completely different. This is a page from the remarkable chronicles of the abbey at St. Gallen in Switzerland, where, by the way, this SN1006, which was so far south that it just barely appeared between some of the peaks of the Alps to the south. And the monks every year for almost 300 years recorded, usually in a single terse sentence, the most important event of the year. And here is the entry MVI 1006, much longer than that typical, and you can read either in Latin or English as your preference. But this is much more extensive. You can just see just by comparing with the more typical entries for the year before, 1005, which says something like a fierce famine, worse than any of our age. And here in 1007, a grave pestilence that caused sudden death for much of the population. So, you know, if the worst thing that happens is a star blowing up, you know, that's not bad given this context. So this was very bright, probably the most the brightest event in recorded human history, solar event, and the visibility is somewhat ambiguous, but probably it lasted as long as 3 years. Here we have images at six epochs, starting in 1987, the most recent only last month, and again, I'll click through some of these, and this is the brightest part, the filaments in the northwest, the brightest ones, then this is going to evolve up to the right. So, and this is this ugly stuff here is just ghost images from the interference filters. Now, somewhat more pronounced than in Tycho, they're also very faint filaments from SN 1006 that surround most of the shell. And so here you probably can see this all the way around there. It's not hard to get, not easy to get this. This is observations of many hours that have been stacked in order to see this. So I'm going to show you, and possibly you can see the expansion of this if we go to the 2010 epoch image. It's subtle. The proper motions are fast. These are over half an arc second per year down here, but as a percentage change over so 5 or 6 arc seconds over a diameter of half a degree is still a pretty small percentage. All right, so now I'm going to just show you the comparison of the optical results with the X-ray motions. This is our Chandra X-ray image from a couple of years ago. And so here, the X-ray proper motions we've measured very carefully, and those are points shown here in blue, and the optical measurements are in red, measured very carefully here in the northwest, where the bright filaments are, and the results for the rest are only preliminary, using in large part the data from last month of these very, very faint filaments. But once again, we see that the optical and the X-ray proper motions agree with one another within the errors. We also find here, too, that the expansion is faster than set off, except down here where the shock is encountering a denser interstellar medium, and as a result, the optical filaments are a lot brighter. All right, so a bit on the physics of non-radiative shocks. I think we've heard so much about this from people who are much more knowledgeable than I. I think I'm just going to skip this slide. Now, everyone can probably draw one of these profiles with narrow and broad emission in their sleep. Here is one example of this from 1006. One point, though, to make here, and a justification for the proper motion measurements using the optical filaments, is that the lifetime for these neutral atoms behind the shock is very short. They do not last long there. So when you look at bomber emission, you're probing the vicinity right immediately behind the shock. And that's part of the reason why these filaments look so nice and delicate and the images that I showed you. Now, the line width depends mainly on the shock velocity, but other factors play a role, electron-ion equilibration, as I'm sure Parviz will tell us in great detail in the next talk, cosmic ray acceleration, et cetera. All these references down here are a long sequence of papers by various folks, again, many of whom are in the audience, who have worked out the physics of this over the years. So now, since we're seeing sheets edge on, and if we can measure the proper motions and the shock velocity, that will give us a geometric distance. But of course, getting the shock velocity depends on the model, so that's is a bit of a rub here. But in a distance that has been much quoted in the literature is one from our 2003 paper of 2.2 kiloparsecs, but using the more recent models, it seems that a 1.6 or 1.7 kiloparsec distance is much more comfortable, and it's also more consistent with the Schweitzer-Middleditch star, which has UV absorption spectra that have been observed against it as it shines through the remnant, so it has to be a background source, and so all that becomes more comfortable. So here we have a few spectra of filaments in Tycho where we also have proper motion measurements, and those are shown here, the full width half max and the proper motion, and we see that this is curving down from linear, at least qualitatively consistent with these models of Morlino and Van Adelsberg. But if we really want to probe these, measuring a range of shock velocities is important. So finally, all right, this is the last slide. As we heard from Elena and from other folks, that turbulent shocks are responsible for cosmic ray emission. Now, cosmic rays consist of not just protons or electrons, but heavier ions as well. And so finding out what happens to those is interesting if we want to learn about this business. Now, in a shock, the most naive view is that in the shock, everybody gets treated the same, or everybody gets accelerated to the same velocity, so that means the heavier ions have a higher temperature, helium four times that for protons and so forth. So but turbulence in the shock can transfer energy among these species. But if we can directly measure profiles for some of these heavier ions, then this gives us a way of actually probing these temperatures. And we have in the queue for COSS on Hubble is the project to do this for the fastest filament here in SN1006, which is faint enough to have a prayer of measuring. This is also this bubble here where a knot of supernovae ejecta is driving the shock faster, about 50% faster than through most of this. So I thank you for attention. I'll leave the spectra up here and take the summary and take questions.
Question concerning Tycho and your measured deceleration parameters over azimuth. Now, if you look at Tycho, the shape of the supernova remnant seems to be very circular, perhaps, I don't know, 5%, 3% or something like that. Now, how can you actually reconcile that with the relatively large variation of the deceleration parameter of between 0.3 and 0.6? If you assume that deceleration parameter variation is constant over a few hundred years? Would you not expect a much more asymmetric shape of the supernova remnant?
That parameter is not telling us what the motion has been over the entire history. It's only comparing what it is today, or over the last 20 years, compared with the average over the last 440 years. So it could have hit a wall, or at least some molasses or something, and relatively recently. So not enough to have caused a large deviation from circularity, but enough to slow it down. Now,
there's also the paper from Monday that Brian Williams gave, where he showed how you can have density asymmetries and still remain and produce fairly circular remnants. Jaco, you have a quick question?
Yes, just a quick remark. This response is not in the A's alpha, also has an active symbol.
I'm sorry?
This fastest knot in H alpha also seems to have X-ray singleton emission.
Uh-huh.
Is that in S1006?
In 1006. So actually that is something, a counterexample against the sort of rims. So this is in a paper by my PhD student Bruce, 2014, I think.
Ah, thank you.
Rob? Real fast.
go back to your 1006 H alpha images, please. The whole thing.
You want this one, or you want the northwest?
The earlier one. That's it. No. No, 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 no. The whole thing.
That guy.
The 1998. The earlier epoch of.
Yes. This should be this. Thank you, Rob. Okay. There.
Is the emission in the upper half that is the elliptical shape? Is that diffuse? Is that real?
Let's see.
Just above the...
Up there?
No. Inside. Well inside.
Oh, this?
No. In the center? There's a big diffuse region.
Oh, this stuff?
Is that real?
It may be. Everything
else in the image looks real. That looks interesting.
Yeah, but it also, just because it's real doesn't mean it has anything to do with SN1006. This could just be, there's H-alpha all over the sky, as you know, at least as well as I. But you can see there is, it looks a little brighter there as well. So there are these patterns, and I'm certainly not going to try to get a spectrum of it. I've worked like hell to try to get spectra here and here, and I've given up. Someone better than I is going to do that project.
Let's thank Frank again.